You're listening to The People's Pitch, the official podcast of Minneapolis City Soccer Club, brought to you by footballstadiumprince.com. Let's start the show.
And as I talked about just a couple minutes ago, as Joe Watt stands over this one, he appears to be the one taking the penalty here. This is a huge confidence booster if you're a Duluth.
Worst case
Elder
scenario for City
for
right here.
And it stopped!
Yes!
And it stopped!
Totally
Matt Elder!
Himself.
Matt Elder redeeming himself! Oliver with the right foot. The shot is
goal! Oliver!
And Justin Oliver will break the scoreless tie. And it is 1-0 Minneapolis City. It's Hutton now on the offense with the left foot.
And another goal!
And it is now 2-0 Minneapolis City.
Good finish.
Nick Hutton taking his quick victory lap.
You are in the right place for hot soccer takes, friends. This is the People's Pitch Podcast, the official podcast of your Minneapolis City Soccer Club. I am your host, John, and alongside me is the deadliest striker in the Burnsville, Minnesota, over 55 men's rec league, the voice of Minneapolis City Game Day, Nate Morales.
That's right.
I mean, not 100% right, but close. Nate, as we close out 2023 and move into 2024, we have set aside the crow topics for today, and we have to discuss the state of soccer in the country this week. Why does soccer suck so hard right now?
It's an interesting news cycle for soccer, for sure, John. We have some stuff to cover. The MLS draft was this week, and I'm going to say too few crows were taken this time around, but with Minnesota United without a manager or a chief soccer officer, we're going to talk about both those positions, from Heath's failure leading the Cousins across town to during his tenure to who's the next guy up, who he is, what does this hire mean, who's the new chief soccer officer. But then, of course, nationally, the big news is the U.S. Open Cup and the MLS relationship. It's a mess. We're going to rant. Of course, we've always got opinions about the Open Cup, but would you believe we're going to come to its defense today? So strap in, folks. Hot takes are coming.
Yeah, I didn't think about that as I was doing the notes, that we're actually defending the tournament that kicked us out. But hey, is what it is. All right, segment two, folks. Heath is out. It seems like forever ago, and we're kicking ourselves for not covering this news when it was simmering on the stove. But finally, Minnesota United Soccer Club, or Football Club, whatever they call themselves, made the right decision, a little late in my opinion, but they parted ways with longtime manager Adrian Heath, I believe in October. I can still hear the Basilica bells ringing once the decision was made, Nate. It took far too long for this club to realize the toilet was backing up, but in the end, they made the right call.
Yeah, it's definitely strange that it took so long, I think. When you look around the league and you see some of the other owners' propensity to pull the trigger at a moment's notice, looking back, you think about the San Jose's, the Charlottes. Charlotte's had, I think, a different head coach every year that they've been in existence. DC United. I looked it up, and I think just over 60 manager changes have been made around the MLS since Heath took over for that 2017 season, which is pretty phenomenal when you consider the league is not that big. An average of two per club. It's pretty crazy.
Before I go on to my rant, I will say, though, that despite Heath's tenure, we're going to go into it, it's pretty impressive that most managers don't even have what seems like more than a year.
Yeah, they don't have this runway
to actually do something. But Minnesota United decided to give their manager too long of a runway. So maybe like somewhere in the middle is the right time frame. But let's take a look at some Heath stats. So he was hired in 2016, the club's first manager in the MLS portion of the club, and his tenure spanned the course of seven seasons. So again, reiterating your point that there's been a lot of turnstile action going on since he has been in charge. In that time, he managed just under 250 games, with a record of 92 wins, 56 draws, and 100 losses. That leads to a 37% winning percentage. Doesn't get you in the Hall of Fame, Nate.
Not great.
37%. But when you look at his total managerial career, which spans back to 1996, where he started with Burnley, he has had only one winning stop in his entire tenure from 96 to 2023. And that was in, I didn't write down what year. Actually, I think I might have it. No, I don't have it up anymore. But that was when he was with Orlando City, which was in the USL Pro. And that stop, he won 67% of his 122 matches. And that puts his Minnesota United tenure at 37% as his second highest win percentage. So habitual loser as a manager. So I'm not calling him himself a habitual loser. I'm talking about his job. He has been a loser everywhere he's gone.
Yeah. Overall, yeah. Of course, everyone's real excited about his stint at Orlando and what he could do, what he did Kyle Larin. And he got, who else was that other striker down there in Orlando that he got? Sidney LaRue's husband.
Oh, Dom Dwyer.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. He got him working and all of a sudden these guys popped up on the radar and everyone was real excited for the striker whisperer to come to town. And that's cool, but there's like 10 other positions.
Yeah. Yeah, there are. Who knew? But, when by striker whisperer, you mean, never mind. I won't go into that. Anyways, overall, he led Minnesota United to playoff qualification in 4 of his 7 years, but that's a skewed stat because everyone basically qualifies for the MLS playoffs. So basically those 3 years where he did not qualify, which were last season, which ultimately led to his firing, and then his first 2 seasons, which were part of the 3-year plan that they always talked about, were severe disappointments. The team never finished higher than 4th place in their division, and that was they equaled that task in 2019 and 20, which netted them to 7th and 9th overall in the league. So top 10 in the league in those 2 years. So that I think is baseline. That's what you're striving for, being the top 10. Mm-hmm. And he was only able to do it in 2 of his 7 years. His best season came in the COVID bubble, where there was literally nothing else that he could do but focus on his job inside some Disney resort, where they ended up losing in the MLS is back tournament in the semifinals to, I think, the ultimate winner. I think it might have been Columbus again. That season, though, in my opinion, was basically saved by goalkeeper of the year Vito Mannoni standing on his head, and then the rest of a lackluster squad that got super lucky that Darwin Quintero and Kevin Molino clicked and they got hot at the right time.
Yeah.
So you're thinking like 3 players, one of which he actually had his hand in, which was Kevin Molino, and then 2 free agent signings in Vito Mannoni and Darwin Quintero. Like, although Darwin kind of totally didn't give a shit towards the end, that year was hot for all 3 of those players. And then ultimately Vito left, Darwin was run out of town, and Kevin Molino ultimately had a knee injury and was released. So the hits just keep on coming.
They do.
Throughout his career, he had his hands directly in the mix for some of the worst decisions, in my opinion. 1, draft picks. Yes, ultimately not in charge of all soccer operations. That was another person, fellow Minnesotan, I believe Manny Lagos, if I'm going to name a name. Directly not aligning playing style to the draft picks that they selected, or drafting draft picks that were ultimately basically just roster players that were in line for position battles instead of drafting for immediate need.
Mm-hmm.
Next one, free agent signings did not pan out. I mean, how many free agent signings did they sign? I think outside of maybe Boxall, Mentenaire, Aiko Parra for a brief period of time, and Boxall, who really did they sign that actually panned out? Maybe Will Trapp, but I don't think Will Trapp's very good either. He was very good somewhere else, not with Minnesota United.
Yeah.
Number 3 on the list, just the absolute nepotism effect. He signed his kid, and his kid sucks. Like, in life and in soccer. Like, never was ever going to see the field. I believe if the setup was the same now, he would have been an MLS Next Pro player and not even considered in the first team. But lo and behold, he came along for the ride. And then he was offered a front office position when they figured out he couldn't actually play at that level. and he was involved in the youth portion of the Minnesota United setup, which we've seen has not had a ton of emphasis in the past.
I didn't know that.
And our circles technically overlap with the futures.
He might be best remembered for getting the red card on the bench at TCF Bank Stadium.
I remember him more so for almost ending Lionel Vang's soccer career in a friendly against them, going over the ball when we were told not to tackle because their players were too important to get injured in a friendly against lowly Minneapolis City. Anyways.
That's when you told me he like rolled up in his like Porsche
Cayenne. Yeah. Clearly his dad bought because he was making nowhere near Porsche Cayenne money. Actually, a Porsche Cayenne was actually more expensive than what he was making annually, according to what is filed through the league. So there's that. So clearly maybe someone who wasn't necessarily a locker room addition. I think bad tactical decisions, like time and time again, outcoached by other soccer minds that actually understand this league instead of trying to go back to maybe Keith's playing days at Everton when there was no color television. So who knows?
Wow.
He was reluctant to bring along any of the youth. So you look at when Minnesota United actually was attempting to foster youth talent, whether they were signing them as bench players to their first team roster or most recently in bringing players through the system, unless he had a need or felt the pressure from anywhere else outside of the coaching room to bring younger players into the setup, which I think is a big mistake. And then never met a substitution he thought would work. So he never made one. And especially at the right time. So time and time again in games, this goes back to the tactical thing, just like constantly went with the starting 11. And that could have been by necessity because he didn't have anyone on the bench who could actually make an impact because personnel wise, they're a mess. But to me, fresh legs are fresh legs. And if you're on an MLS roster or an MLS Next Pro roster, you're there for a reason because you have something that can add to the first team. But he never liked to make those substitutions and it killed a lot of big games to them. So I'll stop here. My final take is this guy was a very nice person. I want to say I met him a few times, handful of times, really great demeanor, really nice guy, very engaging. Said all the right things, but total dog shit as a manager. And that was, he was given way too much time in charge when there was hardly a glimmer that he could actually be successful. There was always like the hope, but never the proof in the pudding. And let's not forget in air quotes here that I'm making, the 3-year plan, which actually ended up as 7 years and was not successful or ever executed. Full stop from John Bismarck.
Yeah, speaking of that 3-year plan, let's not forget, though, that the front office carries some of the burden of the blame for those
100%.
For all those things you just mentioned. When you think about draft strategy, I mean, how many absolute layups did they miss on? Everything from Jackson Ewell to, Brandon Bye, right? Like guys that they refused to pick because Minnesota United didn't develop them, guys that they pick over a position of need for who knows why. It's just it blows my mind, right? The scouting strategy you brought it up, where you're trying to catch a heater from a guy that played in the first division of the Ecuadorian Premier League and think that like you found a diamond in the rough, and there's just only so many guys you can sign like that. Before it's like, you know what, not gonna work.
Every single year, man. It was another every like, year. This guy is bagging 20 goals in Ecuador, and you're like, okay, Ecuador. The Ecuador first division is not too dissimilar from the MLS. Maybe a little more physical, like so that'll translate well. And then they get on the field, and you're like, this guy can't trap a soccer ball. He can't pass.
No.
He misses wide open sitters, like in volume, not just like one, like many. Yeah. So.
And then, of course, the youth development. Like, you remember that kid from Uruguay that we signed when he was 18, and wow, this guy's good. He's super talented, and he's gonna be the next big thing for Minnesota United. And then, like, he never saw the field. So, like, how's he gonna develop? We had no youth program,
or like losing guys in expansion drafts that ultimately become starters elsewhere. Like, what were we not seeing that other teams saw?
Yeah.
You know, like so, that kind of stuff.
Along with, you know, safe to say, John, the decision-making not been great. So along with sweeping Heath out, United also decided to shuffle the front office, I guess if you could call it that. They canned Mark Watson, and they took the keys away from Manny, who is moving on to a like business community development role, yeah, which is about as far away from soccer as they could put him. And I would say that's about that's a thorough house cleaning, right?
Yeah. The only person who I think has left, two people, would be Ian Fuller, who I think, besides having the stink of being on a Heath staff, I think is a good soccer mind. I met him multiple times as well. College teammate of the soccer Buddha, Jeremy. Oh,
yeah.
I think, you know, he's still around. So I hope that he latches on or potentially gets his due somewhere else, which will be great. I think he'd be a great USL championship manager, USL one manager, to get his feet wet in the first seat. And then Amos McGee, who I think
Amos is Amos.
He's been there before. He's been part of this league. I think his new role is very important with helping with the youth side of things. I think it's a right fit for him. So it's like they got maybe one or two of the appointments right. And we don't know about the big one that we're going to talk about next.
Yeah. They've cleared the way for Khaled El Ahmad to join the team as chief soccer officer and sporting director. First of all, John, Milwaukee guy. I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. What do you know about this guy? I mean, he's kind of before you, because you were probably in Germany when he went, when he was at UW.
No, he was, right? He was in my wheelhouse. He played at University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee. I met him many times back in the college days. And ultimately he was part of the Bavarian club for a hot second from both a playing perspective and from a managerial perspective. But I was gone into Minnesota when he kind of came into the mix from a managerial perspective with Bavarians. I think it was one season where he coached the majors. Okay. I wasn't there. But from a playing perspective, we crossed over briefly.
All right. Well, this guy got experience around. I mean, he's got experience in the region, which is interesting. He's also got experience in the league with the City Football Group, CFG. And of course they own Man City. They own Palermo. They own top of La Liga Girona, which is crazy. Mm-hmm. And of course, New York City Football Club, where he worked. So he knows the MLS. He knows how to build an MLS roster. They won the league back in 2021. So he gets it. Most recently, he's been at Barnsley, which is an interesting move. But he's on his way here. He quit Barnsley. He's on his way here in the early part of 2024 to take the reins. John, what are your thoughts on the move? Like, do we even have enough info to judge?
I don't think we have enough info to judge, but there are some flags for me. And some positives. I'll go to positives first. Number one, he played American college soccer. So he understands the pipeline and the necessity to foster the younger group from a draft perspective, like maybe potentially what to look for in a college player, because he himself was one in the United States. Albeit, I wouldn't say a massively wildly successful one, but a solid Division I soccer player. Like you said, he has the background with some interesting clubs. I think that's good there. Here's where I go to the potential red flags. Number one is, does he truly have the reins? Like, yeah. Are there going to be folks from the old regime that are going to buck any of his decisions? Does he have carte blanche to make decisions? That'll be a question mark. Number two, there's been some issues with his Barnsley team fielding an ineligible player in an FA Cup tie. That seems to be something that your chief soccer officer or should know about, that all your players are eligible.
Yeah. Whoops.
And ultimately, like, the success of Barnsley with him in charge has not been great either. And I don't think Barnsley, in the grand scheme of soccer, the global soccer landscape, is really much different from a talent perspective and a league perspective than Minnesota United, to be honest. I think it might even be a slight step down. If I'm applying my opinion. However, you're moving over into a seat where potentially you have full control from maybe where you don't have control, because you're part of like the City group where they have people well above you who are actually pulling the strings. And with Barnsley, like, maybe it's just not as professional of a setup, and it's clearly not top dog in a country like like MLS is, for reasons we'll get into in a little bit. So I don't know. I don't think there's enough to like say great hire, success incoming. Like, it's not like you're bringing in Arsene Wenger, you know, like,
yep.
Or you're bringing in, you know, Ragnick, who has built, you know, global soccer powers before. You're bringing in someone who's trying to get to that level. So I think the runway needs to be long, but the 7 years into a 3-year plan, maybe don't like put a plan in place that's public. Don't say like, in 3 years, we want to be a champion. How about just like, we're going to turn this around and we're going to do things the right way. That's the message I would leave on him when I'm coming in. Yep.
Yeah. And I think he does have definitely had some challenges coming in, right? No manager to start, right? A lot of decisions have been made.
Not here for the expansion, the MLS Super Draft.
Right. I think who's been, you know, I had kind of a hint of a point earlier, like who's been running the ship as these roster decisions are being made between
the old guard.
Kind of just hanging on. I mean, releasing DeBassi, but keeping DJ Taylor, crazy to me. Cutting all but three of the Minnesota United 2 players. Who's been planning? Who planned for the MLS draft? Feels like he might have an absolute shit show to untangle next month, maybe, with the season set to start March 2nd. And that brings us to like just how this club operates in general. Like, I don't know how many Februaries we've had a podcast where we're wondering, like, what are United have 11 guys on the roster and it's February. What are we doing here?
And they're off in Florida for a preseason.
Yep.
You're like, how do you have a full preseason with 12 guys?
Yeah. So I don't know. He's definitely got a challenge, but I mean, we'll see. See how it goes. He's got a good foundation with some of the guys on the roster that he does have. It's just a matter of.
Yeah, I think, you know, if it's my 90-day plan, it's the draft happened, and I don't actually, looking at the draft, I think that they drafted probably two of the players they drafted are players that could potentially step in and play. Yeah, there'd be rookie growing pains, but they could add value, and a handful of the rest that I don't think are going to add much value and might be to fill that almost non-existent MLS 2 roster. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but my 30-day plan would be hire the right manager. You got to get that right. You cannot, in with this team and this organization, hire the wrong person.
I got a question. You said this to me, and I've been thinking about it too. As they kept what's his face in there as the interim manager, Sean McCauley, right?
I don't even know who that is.
I don't either. Assistant coach. They kept him as the interim manager, and before. I think before they fired Heath, you were like, here's what United should do. And that's don't hire someone for the short term. Right.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And maybe take a page out of the like women's national team book or whatever, and just say, you know what? McCauley's going to be the interim manager for a few months because we have to wait for the rest of the soccer world to catch up. And there's mm-hmm. somebody that needs to finish their season in Europe or wherever before he joins us in the summer. And that's what's going to happen. So whether that's a Michael Bradley or whether, you know what I mean? Like there are managers that are available or will be available that might want to make that step up into the first, into like the, you know, the big chair that might not be ready. That might not be available in January, February. So I'm fine saying we're going to wait and we're going to get the guy that we think is going to be the leader of the team for the next, you know, five to 7 years.
I mean, honestly, poor girl. I don't know what Bruce Arena's situation is, but if I could make a snap decision, I'd go Bruce Arena. Whether you like it or you don't, the guy knows the league and he's a proven winner. Like whatever happened in his last stop, but he's been cleared of everything in New England. And I mean, the guy's got World Cup experience. Like he understands things, but maybe that's not the right fit for Bruce either. So you got to get that one right. Absolutely.
For sure.
All right. Well,
time to get you riled up.
Yeah. If the hits weren't coming just when you thought my blood wasn't already boiling on this episode, I've reached my tipping point and my Apple Watch may get hotter and call 911 automatically. So who knows? But this week, news hit the wire that MLS did a very MLS thing and publicly announced they'd be pulling their senior sides from the oldest domestic tournament in the country, the U.S. Open Cup, in favor of entering their NPL MLS Next Pro sides that are already in the competition, which is weird. So
let me be clear.
They didn't ask. They told U.S. Soccer that they were going to do this. Almost like when my kids tell me they're going to go in the basement and play Xbox right in the middle of dinner time. Like,
whoa,
wait a second. So the arrogance of MLS has always been tied to their backing / partnership with United States Soccer. Like, you can say stuff like that when you have no one to answer to. Like, you're essentially one of the adults in the room and you're like, I got a great idea. We're going to go to Vegas this weekend. It's like, okay, well, sure. Go to Vegas. You have the means. Go ahead. But this is just to tell the Federation what you're doing with what seems to be no pre-conversation is like just on a whole nother level, dude. Like, just I can't wrap my head around it. It's like it's just like fun and games, you know, like. You know, yeah. What we're gonna do? We're just gonna tell. We're just gonna bow out of this thing, and then we're gonna do it like, strategically. We're gonna do it like the week before or the week of our schedule announcement. So there's nothing that anyone can do about it because our schedule's set. Schedule's set in stone. Can't change it. It's on Twitter. You know, like what could they possibly be doing?
Yeah. Did you read the statement at all, John? Or I mean, we've got it right here, basically.
I have it right here. I can read it off if you'd like me to. Sure. So this was kind of a joint kind of culmination statement between what MLS said and what U.S. Soccer responded with. So it states, full verbatim quote for quote here, Major League Soccer recently proposed to United States Soccer. I proposed. Let's get the red pen out. Told U.S. Soccer a plan for MLS Next Pro teams to represent the league in the 2024 Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup. MLS took that step because it believes there are several essential goals and concerns that must be addressed in connection to the tournament, including developing young professional players, providing them with a greater opportunity to play before fans in meaningful competition in a tournament setting, prioritizing player health and safety, reducing schedule congestion, which... They just basically plugged in the league stuff, which they created, reducing schedule congestion for MLS clubs and enhanced investment from U.S. Soccer. I don't have no idea what that would mean. The next paragraph reads, U.S. Soccer has subsequently notified MLS that the Federation is not prepared to grant the necessary waiver for MLS Next Pro clubs owned by MLS owners to participate in the Open Cup. Independently owned MLS Next Pro clubs such as Chattanooga, Carolina, remain eligible for the 2024 Open Cup. MLS is committed to finding a viable solution for the 2024 tournament and is working to find a pathway to address its goals and concerns. No, it's not. It basically just told them, this is what we're doing. Like it or leave it.
Yep.
Moving forward, MLS will remain focused on increasing opportunities for up-and-coming players, a key component of the league's players' development strategy that ultimately benefits the U.S. national team program. Why they had to throw the U.S. national team in there is very concerning to me that these two entities are truly are not and never were separated. We thought with the fact that some was dropped from the U.S. national setup, that some marketing, that is.
Yeah, Soccer United Marketing. Yeah.
Soccer United Marketing, that they with them not being retained by United States Soccer, that this kind of stuff would go away. But it seems from that last statement that the focus still is on the U.S. national team program and how.
Yeah, MLS, I don't. I read that as like internet. I read that as almost like a threat, you know, like they're kind of holding it over them like, hey, you know, we just want what's best for the U.S. national team program. Make sure that we're developing the players correctly, whatever. And it's just like the whole statement is full of all these like really backhanded, like half truths you know, just hints like that where they're saying, you know, we just want to make sure that the MLS is focused on something that benefits the national team program. Like, no, they're not. If you want to bet, the national team program has nothing to do with the MLS talent wise, or shouldn't, because look at what happens when we lean on the MLS for our talent. And that's a whole other thing. But John, you and I have talked about this a few times that like the biggest lie that the MLS is trying to tell is that they are the home for the top US talent in the world. And that,
why do you think everyone goes to Europe?
Right. Exactly. So I think anyone close to soccer, like everyone from Jimmy Conrad to Eric Winalda to John Bizworm to Nate Morales, they can see through this rhetoric and you get to the real reason why they're trying to make this decision, which is of course money and control.
I'll say this. I want to hear from someone like Landon Donovan, who very publicly chose, I want to play at home because I'm comfortable here in MLS.
Yeah.
Which he could have played elsewhere. And I believe if you go and listen to, I forget what the name of the show is with, on CBS online. It's got Mo Adu and Charlie Davies, Clint Dempsey, and then I forget what her name is that does
Kate Abdo.
Kate Abdo. Yep. If you go back and watch the Landon Donovan episode, he publicly admits, like, I truly believe I could have been successful abroad, but whenever I did that, it was pretty much a show. Like, it was just part of like, I was trying something that I knew I could do, but I wasn't 100% focused on it. So I was tired and it just didn't work out. Or like when he went to Leverkusen, like he didn't even know what to expect. And he was 16 years old and it's just like, what do I do here? But on the other side of that coin, he is an MLS apologist. Like he's ride or die MLS. And I want to know what he thinks about this, because it's kind of a shot in the face of guys like him as well. Like we don't care about this tournament. And last point before I let you go here is to go back to that, like ultimately benefiting the US national team program. If that was the case, then why was it a mandate for Jurgen Klinsmann to have 30% of his roster for the World Cups be comprised of MLS players?
Yeah.
And, right, like, and that was, yeah, and that was like
he had to, like, if you don't, then it makes the MLS look bad, and we don't want that, right? And that's a marketing move, right? That's a market, that's a brand positioning to say the MLS is a home for the top US talent in the world, and you can see that because our players are going on to play for the US men's national team, and some of them are, and that's that's great, like you said, some of them are more comfortable playing at home or just never broke into Europe or whatever, but
or not
ultimately
the right time in their career, they're not quite ready yet, like that's all
you know. You got your Joe Scalise who started, you know, he was at NYCFC.
Look at Tim Ream.
Yep. Pepe, like, Ferreira, like all these guys. Yeah, Tim Ream, right? All these guys either started at or had a long-term home in the MLS, and that's fine, but to say that, like, anything that, and to say that to benefit the MLS is to benefit the men's national team program is just delusional for them.
Yep.
The Lamar Hunt Open Cup, John, if people need a reminder, which they probably shouldn't, is 110 years old. It's the only open competition among all levels of the U.S. soccer pyramid. Minneapolis City has played in it a number of tried to qualify for it a couple other times. And you find out through that and through stories from our friends at Tulsa and other, you know, even from what we hear from Duluth and things in their experiences, that it's obviously already severely tilted in favor of MLS teams, right? Those teams don't enter into until the fourth round. And by then, any lower league team that had to work to qualify for the tournament is dead tired. Dead tired, right? And they've gone up against USL2 teams, USL1 teams, championship teams, right? It's so expensive. And these MLS teams, these higher league teams, have the money, they've got the resources to make things like travel easier. And still, John, the MLS teams can lose to lower league teams. Think about Union Omaha beating Minnesota United. Think about Pittsburgh's run last year where they beat New England and Columbus. Birmingham beat Charlotte. Like, these are the kind of results when we go back again to the marketing message of the MLS is a home for US national talent. This goes back to, I mean, these are the results that the MLS cannot stand, because their owners pay a lot of money in franchise fees to be the top soccer product in the US. And this is one that messages that they measure up around the world. And they can't fathom, John, the reality that sometimes, you know what, you get beat.
Yeah.
Sometimes Barnsley will surprise you in the third round of the FA Cup.
Yeah.
And you know what? You got to live with that if you're Crystal Palace sometimes.
It's okay.
That's the point of the tournament. That's what builds the soccer, the goodwill for soccer in a country, right?
People are always gonna turn up to the Man City, Man United FA Cup game, regardless.
Yeah.
But are they going to pay more attention to Wimbledon beating, you know, Leeds? Yes, 100%.
Yeah, because that's crazy. And that'll get headlines, and someone at Leeds will probably get fired. But still, like, when you think about, you know, I grew up playing baseball and loving baseball and loving the Twins. And that was always one of the things that you'd be able to watch TV and watch these guys play and be like, Kent Herbick is just this fat fuck from Bloomington. Just, you know, just like me. He's from Bloomington, just like me. And anyone can play baseball. And that's the best thing, to think that like anyone can grow up and play. And that's why soccer is loved so around the world so much, is because kids from nowhere, Africa, you know, and from like the like worst neighborhoods of Rio de Janeiro can grow up thinking I'm going to play soccer one day.
Or the rich kid from Wayzata.
Right. And that's fine.
It's totally fine.
And that's fine. And so like part of what drives that narrative is when teams that probably shouldn't beat professional teams or higher level teams beat them. And then it's like the underdog story is alive and real. And like I said, MLS owners cannot fathom that reality, that money can't buy you this all the success you want, even if you're buying a new tournament out of thin air in the middle of the season. And when you couple that, John, with the fact that these owners, the league, doesn't really see a cent of the broadcasting dollars from their lucrative messy TV contract.
That's their own fault.
Yeah. CBS has the Open Cup rights. And so at the end of the day, it just feels like you got a lot of old men with full diapers crying in their mansions because they're not getting the kind of investment return on investment that they thought or that they see in their NFL business.
Yeah. There's a lot for me to add to what you just said, but I'm going to let it rest. I'm going to be the bigger person in the room here. But here's where all this hits home for me, Nate, just so we don't make this podcast 6 hours long. My final statement is take all the MLS stuff out. I love this tournament. I have had multiple family members personally who played in it going back to the 1960s and even won the tournament with Bavarians.
Mm-hmm.
I've played in it in the past myself. I've been on the coaching staff or in charge of two of the three Minneapolis City runs in the cup, including the one where we got kicked out. And I've had difficult conversations with people in the US Open Cup, but you know what? I respected the decisions. I didn't make up my own thing. I didn't say like, you know what? I'm going to start my own tournament because of fixture congestion. Nothing like that. So everything about this competition to me is centered around the purity of competitive adult soccer, plain and simple. Mm-hmm. We talked about the underdog stories and the joy it brings. Like we were both on two sides of the fence last Open Cup run for City. How excited was it at 9th Street Coffee when Lionel Vang hit that 30-yard free kick?
Yeah, crazy.
I was there, and I couldn't even like explain to you the joy that gave to me. And I was like, and the team and Lionel. Like being on SportsCenter, you know, like that's what this is all about. Luik scoring the game tying goal. Ultimately, we lost 4-2, but scoring the game tying goal against professional soccer players that they brought in, and being, you know, getting called up 3 days before the tournament and being like, you know what, kid, it's your show. Like, go do it. Mm-hmm. Starting the game, playing the 90, scoring a goal, like getting himself on the radar for colleges, for pro opportunities, ultimately going on and playing, getting signed in MLS. And do you think that he was on the roster discussion in the MLS before that happened?
No.
He had been cut from tryouts twice. Like, so talking about this doesn't give a platform to their younger players when they literally went and signed a player who performed at a young age from a local club because of what he did at that local club and ultimately getting on the radar in the Open Cup. It's a bunch of bullshit, man. So to digest what has transpired this past week, It really makes my heart hurt. And here's why. It further intensifies my disdain for the top league in our country. I pay very little attention in present and in the past to Major League Soccer. It's just, that's just what it is. I don't agree with what they do. I don't agree with our closest connection to the league and what they do. And I mean, no, we just went over a bunch of reasons why I don't. But any glimmer of me being part of anything they do is now gone. And I'm now forced into a fight between MLS diehards and soccer purists when I didn't even want to be in it.
Neither of those camps are ones that you have lived comfortably in.
But now I'm in it and I didn't want to be in it. I wanted to have my own opinion. I wanted to be like, okay, whatever. You know, like MLS is MLS. They'll do their thing. They won't hurt me. Well, they hurt me with this. So I'm in this fight that I don't want to be in now. And I'm very quiet publicly about it other than this podcast, because I just don't want to be involved in it. But now I truly have a valid reason to choose a side. And that's against MLS finally. Like, and as a member of the soccer community, it totally sucks, because I want what is good for the game. Whether the true soccer purists and the pro rel folks, if they're lumped together, then I guess I'm lumped together with them. But I have my own opinions on why this tournament is special to me, why it's great for soccer, and everyone involved in it. But now, until this plays out, MLS can get bent. And thanks for ruining my holidays.
Yeah. It hurts to get hurt, John.
It does. It does. I've been broken up with.
I think that's enough on that. I think we'll see what happens. In the end, the MLS is going to win somehow. I think they're going to get more money out of the US Open Cup is what I think.
I think that and expanded rosters for the Open Cup. So they'll basically be able to roster the play. They're going to get what they ultimately wanted. And the young players are going to play until the games matter, which is how the FA Cup works in England.
Yeah.
Right. So they're going to get what they wanted. Who did
Newcastle, even in the Champions League, Newcastle's trotting out like 17-year-old kid, that Miley kid, I think is his name. Anyway. Yeah.
But so MLS is going to ultimately get what they want, and they're going to be able to expand their rosters. They're going to get a bigger slice of the pie, and everyone's going to be like, nope, see, US soccer came down hard and they have to play. Well, yes, I guess. But that's what's going to happen. And all of us who have a strong opinion about the league and the federation are going to read between the lines and know it's a bunch of bullshit.
Yeah. Well, folks, thanks for listening to this week's show. Thanks to our wonderful show sponsor, footballstadiumprince.com. Look, it's probably too late. You missed out on your opportunity to give a good gift, but there's always just buying stuff for yourself. So if you're in the market for supremely curated soccer-focused graphic design on mugs, on T-shirts,
bar mitzvahs,
yeah, head on over to footballstadiumprince.com. Maybe you didn't get anything you liked, so go buy yourself something nice at footballstadiumprince.com. Don't forget, use that code. Yes, use that code CROWS10 for 10% off on everything you purchase.
Every little girl across America wants a John Bizorn Legends T-shirt.
Yes. All U.S. orders are going to ship from the States, so you don't get hit with those shipping charges or shipping delays. It's all good. As a reminder, Minneapolis City is a 501c3 organization, so make sure you're beefing up that tax deduction. You got about 9 days left to make a charitable gift to the club for 2023. And memberships for 2024 season are on sale now. I think the price goes up in the new year, right? So make sure you submit your seat in the stands. Get yourself some sweet swag, get that early discount, head on over to mplscitysc.com and become a member today. If you want to get a hold of us, hit up the club on Twitter, X at mplscitysc, or you can hit us up at the show directly at the People's Pitch, or email us, mcscpodcast@gmail.com. The kids don't email anymore, John.
They don't. It's just Snapchat.
All Snapchat. We're not. That's all for this week.
What's happened?
I'm Nate. That was John. We got a little bit of a break while we enjoy some time with our family and friends, and we'll be back with you in the new year with some new content. It's going to be fucking wonderful. But until then,
get up. We're rolling for USA, baby.
Bye.